The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Man in Line's on today through till 1. You can call, text, email or WhatsApp. And the leaders of political parties represented in Tynwald are on today. Laurie Hooper, Ramsay MHK, leads Liberal Fannin. Joni Farragher, representing Douglas East, leads the Manx Labour Party. Well, the Manx Labour Party was the first organised political party on the Isle of Man, formed in 1918... Liberal Fannin, a little younger. You remember it was formed in 2006 by Peter Caron, then an independent MHK for Onchan. And Laurie Hooper and Joni Farragher, welcome. Good afternoon. Fast amai.
Thanks very much.
Fast amai.
Joni Farragher, so you've been leader since when was it?
I think it was about 2019.
Okay. So, how does the Isle of Man Labour Party infuse what you do? I mean, we've talked many times about there being independent MHKs. What there are two MHKs in Tynwald, yourself and Sarah Maltby. How does that work on a day to day basis?
So, I think our sort of the backbone of our politics, our ethos, is just pervades through everything that we do, right, in within Tynwald and within our constituency work, and that's always there. So our ideas on poverty and on the harm that deep inequality causes, and how we can solve those through affordable housing and mental health and inclusive education, they're through everything that we do. We obviously work quite closely together as well within Tynwald when a parliamentary session is sitting. We liaise quite closely so that our votes are aligned on, right, ideological issues.
So they're synchronised.
Yeah.
The votes are together. Laurie Hooper, obviously just one MHK within Tynwald. Heard you talking to Phil Gawne on Sunday. The position of the Liberal Fannin at the moment, which way is up, as it were?
It's a really interesting one. I mean, we had quite a bit of success with our local commissioner candidates. Actually, all the members that stood for election to commissioners were successful. So now, for the first time in a while, I have some elected colleagues actually sitting at local authority level around the island, which is proving to be quite helpful, both for me in a national role, being able to support them in things they're trying to achieve, and vice versa. I suppose the biggest challenge we have is trying to get people involved in party politics, involved not just with Liberal Fannin, but with any party, actually, yeah, that may exist on the island, because that is how we, I think, strengthen our democracy. And that's a big challenge, and people don't really understand sometimes, well, what is the benefit? Why would I join a political party? What's the benefit of doing that? So we're having a public meeting, actually, on the 27th of October at the Manx Legion at 7:30, where we're going to talk about, well, why would you consider joining a party, and why would you consider joining Liberal Fannin? And I'll give you a really good, concrete example of the way membership actually affects outcomes. So personally, I'm not a big fan of the horse trams. I like them, but actually I don't think we should be spending lots of money extending them to the sea terminal. It's never been my particular bag. My party, on the other hand, disagrees. And so we ended up at a public meeting. One of the party members decided, well, let's have a talk about what our party position should be on this. So a member of the public, who's a member of Liberal Fannin, said, actually, we should support the horse trams being extended all the way to the sea terminal. There was a discussion, there was a debate, there was a vote, and so now I am 100% behind extending the horse trams to the end of the prom, to the sea terminal, because that's what my party wants to do. And actually, that's a benefit. You don't get that with independence. You don't get the ability to input into those decisions partway through a term. You have to wait for another election. I mean, you can call your MHK, but generally speaking, you're going to be ignored. You're only one voice. Whereas actually, when you're doing it in a more structured way through a party, if you've got an issue you want resolving, you want your MHKs out there fighting a particular fight, you can do that. Yeah. And it's the benefit of a democratic party system, I think.
I was listening to you on Sunday talking to, and you were, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you were saying that you can really get away with saying, I tried, but it didn't work to the member of the public.
Yes. So if you're an independent, you can do that because you can walk in making all sorts of promises. And then when it doesn't happen, when you don't succeed for whatever reason, you can say, well, actually, I really supported that, but the rest of them wouldn't let me do it.
Right.
And especially because a lot of these votes are done behind closed doors, so that there isn't a cohesive policy decision made on what we're going to do before you get elected. So you get in, then you form a government, then you decide what you're going to do. And actually, if you're outvoted on things, it's quite easy to say to people, well, actually, I didn't support that one, but I kind of had to. And sometimes that is true. You know, collective responsibility is an issue, but it's often used as a bit of an excuse to say, well, I couldn't really do anything. And actually, that's a real weakness of our system. I want my MHKs and MLCs to be out there doing things, delivering on stuff. Now, you might not agree with everything they do, but you want them doing things. You don't want them sat on their hands for 5 years, not achieving anything. And if I'm a voter, I want to know what they're going to try and do before I cast my vote, not afterwards. And that's part of the problem we have at the minute, is people, you make all sorts of promises at election time, they get in, they immediately realise those things are impossible. And rather than holding their hands up and saying, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have promised those things, they turn around and go, well, it's not me, it's the other people that wouldn't work with me, right, wouldn't support me. It's a very weak system in terms of holding us as MHKs accountable, I think.
And would you forgive the public or constituents if they start to despair when they hear things like that?
No, and I think that feeling of despair is already there. That kind of apathy exists already. I think I said this the other day on in response to a radio question, said, what should the Manx public feel about some of these things? And I just said, well, Christian, they feel what they feel. They already know how they feel about this government. They know how they feel about our politics being mired in kind of indecision and indecisiveness, and that's kind of where we're at. And it's an unfortunate consequence of the system that we have, is you're not going to get decisive decisions and big things decided by an administration, because each individual member is always looking out for themselves, rather than being able to take a step back and think, I know I've got the support of my party colleagues, I know I've got the support of the public, because they voted me in on a mandate to do this thing. It's much harder than to do big things and to do things quickly.
Okay. I think because ultimately it is a party system that we end up having. It's just an impromptu one with no actual cohesion, because that's why we create the Council of Ministers that don't have any political cohesion, and backbenchers that again don't have any political cohesion, who are supposed to be the two opposing parties in our parliament. So we have to forcibly create a party system once a parliament's formed, and that does lead to very long-winded decision-making processes.
I mean, it's been mentioned in the past that these things kind of just happen and it will coalesce and it'll turn out okay in the end.
That's a very optimistic view, isn't it? It will coalesce. There's not very much coalescence on when you are forcibly creating a group of people who are supposed to agree on everything, and you have to bind them by collective responsibility. I think within Council of Ministers meetings there will be a lot of argument and not very much coalescence on certain issues. And it would be the same for the backbenchers, whereas if we did have those political parties, there would be a lot more coherent, there would be a lot more agreement.
Okay, all right, let's get to the lines now. And we've got, I think, Andy's first with us. You're live with Joni Farragher and Laurie Hooper, Andy.
Good morning. Andy, I called in last week just to do a bit of a plug for the listening session that was going to be happening in Port Erin on Thursday. I just wanted to do a bit of a follow-up on that, if I may. That session was well attended, and it was a great opportunity for those who had adverse events from the COVID vaccines to get their stories across. There is another event happening this Thursday. It's at the Keel Derry site on the Nobles Hospital site. I did want to ask Mr. Hooper and Ms. Farragher if they are likely to be attending that. It's this Thursday, 6 o'clock.
Okay, Laurie Hooper.
Yeah, thanks. No, I've been supporting and promoting some of these events. Actually, I've had a few constituents reach out to me talking about how important it is that they have the opportunity to go and talk and to feed back into the system their concerns and their experiences. And I think that's probably what these events are about. It's not really about politicians going along and trying to make it all about them. I think really the service that's being provided by Manx Care, they need to hear direct experiences, I think, from people who need support and who need help. And the easiest thing to do is to let people do that themselves. But I'm more than happy to talk to anyone who has any concerns or wants to provide any feedback directly. I mean, that's quite a regular thing in this job anyways. People are happy to talk to you about their problems, but I don't intend to go to the listening events.
Okay, Joni Farragher.
Pastor Mai, Andy, thanks for the question. I don't think I'll be attending the event. Again, I would agree with Laurie that the reason that Manx Care are holding these events is to listen to members of the public and their experiences. I have spoken with constituents about this particular event and received a few emails and responded to those, and I'll continue to do that.
Okay, a final word, Andy.
I appreciate the words there. I would nicely disagree with both of you in the sense that your attendance at the event, I think, would be hugely valuable. But I understand what you're saying. Other than that, anybody who's listening and feels that they might be in the group that might want to attend these things, please turn up. It is, like I said, Keel Dairy up at the Nobles Hospital site.
Why would it help, Andy, if there were a politician there?
I think it's very, very valuable for politicians to hear these stories directly, face to face, look these people in the eye and have these conversations. I've spoken to many people who were in this group and they have struggled to get recognition from politicians on the island. And generally speaking, they've struggled to get recognition from anybody. There hasn't been a lot of support in the political class and the medical side of things to get this recognized. And all we're asking for is for people to recognize that these people exist. And there's been an awful lot of pushback.
Okay.
So I think it would be valuable to have
Keel Dairy on Thursday, you say, yeah?
That's correct, yeah, 6 o'clock.
Okay, appreciate it.
7:30.
Thanks for calling today. And Eric's with us now. Eric, you're live with Laurie Hooper and Joni Farragher. Eric?
Hi, Andy and Laurie and Joni.
Hi, Eric.
Hi. I believe you're both members of the DOI. And Joni, you're the political member for in charge of the Busvanen.
That's right.
Two weeks ago, your minister, Mr. Haywood, was on this programme and promised me that Class 2 mobility scooters would be on buses in 3 weeks' time. So that leaves 1 week left. So can you assure me that I and my scooter will be on a bus next Tuesday?
Okay, thanks for your question, Eric. And just, I know you'll be aware of this because we've corresponded a few times, that I'm very much on board with what you're saying, and I'm very much supportive of rolling out wider accessibility for Class 2 scooters on the buses. If that's what the Minister has said, then that must have been a target that we were working towards. But can I get back to you about that, Eric? I have your email address, and can I just check that with Busvanen that next week is the deadline that we're heading for?
Okay. Laurie Hooper?
Yeah, like I said, I hadn't heard that interview, so it's good to know if there is a target for this, because this has been going on for forever, if I'm honest, doesn't it, Eric? This has not been a quick journey to get from where we started a number of years back, where there wasn't even, I think, an acceptance by the government that we should be helping people with mobility scooters get on the buses, to where we are now, where I think government policy is we should make it happen. I'm not familiar with the timescales, but if the minister has promised it was 3 weeks, then I would say that's probably something that's valid.
How confident are you, Eric?
Not very, especially if the two members in the DOI don't know anything about it. But if Joni can get back to me, and we wait and see what happens in the next week.
Okay, we appreciate it. Thanks, Eric. Good to hear from you. I mean, Joni Farragher and Laurie Hooper as well. Considering that the government's plans for active travel are where they are, I mean, genuinely, why has this taken so long, Joni Farragher, to get mobility scooters on buses?
I'll be absolutely honest, Andy, I can't answer that question. For a lot of the time that the accessibility steering group has been set up, I hadn't been elected, and I wasn't in government. Now that we have got the accessibility steering group in action, and we have the trial that's been undertaken quite recently for the number 21, and that went successfully, we should be looking to roll this out more widely. And there is a Tim Wall commitment to do so, and I know that the political team are all very, very much supportive of rolling this out more widely. I think there are some staff training issues that need to be overcome, and there are some in terms of how mobility scooters will get on and off a vehicle. We need to work out the practicalities of that, but none of this is insurmountable.
Yeah. I mean, you've obviously been in correspondence with Eric. He's been metaphorically bashing his head against the wall for a long time, hasn't he?
Wait. Yeah, from what I've heard from Eric, yes, absolutely he has, and you know, hats off to him for really pushing on this issue for as long as he has.
Okay, let's go. Oh, it's Bonzo with us now. Hello, Bonzo, you're live with Joni Farragher and Laurie Hooper now.
Hello there, Joni, and hello there, Laurie.
Hello.
Talking about party politics and why perhaps it isn't successful on the Isle of Man. And I think one of the things about that, given how we elect people, is our peculiar system of first-past-the-post system with two members in a constituency. Also, of course, with the tendency to encourage people to stand as MHKs, it also dilutes and splits that vote, which will turn out, rather than attracting more votes. And what happens is, of course, the situation which we have at the moment, where I think a lot of people stay away from the polls because they go, well, does my vote matter? Does it change anything? Does anything happen? Which I think brings us back to the idea of the basics of the electoral system. Do you both think that adopting simple proportional representation, single transferable vote, for the next election is something that really needs to be done urgently?
Johnny Farragher.
Thanks for your question, Bonzo. I've always been a fan of single transferable vote, and but I would be reticent to look to a massive overhaul of our electoral system like that would take up a lot of resource at a time when we perhaps might need to be focusing on some of the bigger issues. That said, I am supportive of the principle and I agree with your issues about first past the post.
For the uninitiated, Joni Farragher, could you explain STV, single transferable vote? How does it work?
I'm sure Bonzo can.
Bonzo, how does it work?
Yeah, well, simple transferable. You have your candidates and you can rate them in order of preference. So you got your first preference candidate, your number one, and then number two candidate, number three candidate, however many candidates you've got. Then they count up the votes. And then you've got the ones that have got first preference, right? But then the one who gets the lowest number of first preferences gets eliminated, and their second choices go in. So it sort of goes round and round a bit. Perhaps it takes a little bit more counting, but the thing is that what happens is that most, because of their preference votes, most votes for the person who gets elected, that will be a majority of the actual votes, rather than the kind of situations where you can get in. Well, in Douglas East, for example, you tend to have a lot of candidates, and those candidates then split the vote. So you can end up with an MHK being elected with, I think Chris Robertshaw was elected with less than 400 votes as an MHK on that. So I think no one would say that was representative.
Okay. Laurie Hooper, your opinion?
Well, the system we have at the minute is sort of an STV system anyway. People, when I talk to them at least, tend to think of their two votes as a first and second choice. I know it doesn't work like that in the actual counting, but that's the way a lot of people seem to approach the multi-member constituencies. Is that a core thing we should be worrying about before the next election? Probably not. If I'm honest, I think there's not a lot of time left to get stuff done, and I think you need to do stuff that really is going to directly help people as much as we can. Is it something we should maybe look at longer term? Possibly. The current system isn't perfect, but I think if you're looking at changing the way we vote, maybe you need to be looking at larger constituencies, for example. There's all sorts of I think, questions you could ask if you wanted to do a root and branch review of our electoral system. But like I said, I think at the minute, we kind of have a sort of rough and ready STV type system as it stands with the kind of first and second preference approach that most people take when they're voting. But also, I don't know if it would produce different outcomes. Turnout in Ramsey, for example, is pretty decent by all accounts. I like to think that's the quality of candidates that's driving that turnout, but it could be anything. But I think there's definitely a valid concern there, Bonzo, about the low turnout that we see in some parts of the island, not just for national elections, but local elections as well. Actually getting people involved in politics on the island and getting people to understand that it really matters when you cast your vote. Someone is getting elected. You may as well vote for the person who's going to do the least bad job, even if you don't have a favourite candidate. And actually, I think that's where party politics kicks back in, because if we can get people more involved in political decision-making, in the political process in between elections, hopefully you're more likely than to get people out to actually vote when it matters on election day.
Okay, final word, Bonzo?
Well, I think I disagree with the idea that somehow it's overly complicated, because, of course, it has been done before on the Isle of Man. So I think a simple couple of regulations placed would probably get it done. And I think everyone understands the principle perfectly well. And also from the point of representation, well, it would encourage, as I say, greater voter turnout from the people who stay away because they don't think their vote matters. And I think that would be more representative of political parties. I think under such a system, all the current political parties, including the Greens, would benefit from that. But we do need a visibly fairer and more participative electoral system, especially now that, given these kind of small turnouts, these things can be manipulated and hijacked by populist populist minorities.
Okay, all right, Bonzo, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today. Here's Stan, who says, a question I'd like to ask your guests. Being Democrats, where they stand with regard to the motion which will be tabled by Stu Peters regarding a referendum on net zero. I'm not interested in their thoughts on net zero itself, rather where they stand on the concept of the Manx people having the ultimate say, so the principle of a referendum, and how they perceive that sits with their specific political parties. Laurie Hooper.
So actually, I think the motion itself is quite badly timed because next year we have a general election. And so if whatever the issue is, actually, surely it's better to tell people standing for election, be clear on what your position is on this. So the issue in this case is net zero. OK, maybe as part of the general election, candidates should come out quite clearly and explain where they stand on net zero, and people can cast the vote accordingly. I don't think you need a separate referendum to decide that. If we were in between elections, maybe there's a case to say let's have a dedicated referendum on something like this, but we have an election anyway. Yeah. Is it going to be an election issue? I'm pretty certain it's going to be an election issue. So surely just go out there as candidates and tell people what you think and where you stand on the issue, and people can cast their votes one way or the other. That's the democratic system that we have. I don't think you want to run the extra cost of a referendum on that. I think the risk you run if you're going to do a referendum on it is you won't actually get any candidates coming down one way or the other on net zero, because what they will say is, well, I can't possibly comment on that issue because there's a referendum being voted on at the same time, so I will wait and see what the referendum says before I tell you what I think. And that's quite a dangerous place to be in, because you could end up electing people who fundamentally disagree with the referendum outcome, for example. Well, how do you know what they're going to do with that? I would much rather the candidates, the people who are going to be empowered to make decisions on our behalf, they set out their stall, go to the voters and say, this is what I believe, vote for me or don't vote for me. That is a much better approach than trying to run a referendum at the same time as a general election, I think.
Joni Farragher?
Yeah, so interestingly, we have already had a referendum debate in this administration, which was on assisted dying in Keys, and that was voted down, most people giving the reason in their speeches that it was so deeply divisive, it would leave a legacy of deep division and rifts within our society, such as we saw in the larger adjacent aisle over Brexit. And we didn't want that to be our legacy. And I think that I would very much agree with Laurie's words, actually, that there is a general election next year. And if candidates on the doorstep are to be asked by their constituents what they think about net zero, and then that person is going to vote based upon that answer, that's much more democratic, actually, than putting it to a referendum, which we've seen attracts a high level of misinformation. Yeah. And can be skewed, and a lot depends upon the actual wording of the question that you use.
Yeah, do you go along with the thought that if there were a referendum on the same date as the general election, it would drive turnout?
No, definitely not. I mean, if people don't care enough about our broken healthcare system, poor education, lack of housing, if they don't care about those issues that are absolutely fundamental to our society, I'm not sure that net zero is going to drive people out to vote.
OK, just a quick word. Benjamin, this is to Joni Farragher. Why did Labour Party members vote against each other in the budget?
So I decided to vote against the budget this year, and I gave my reasons in that debate. It had been, Sarah and I discussed that before the budget debate. So we had decided that we were okay with having different votes. I gave my reasons for that very clearly in that debate, which were mainly based upon the funding allocated to health and social care, and my personal views that I've been very vocal about, that we haven't followed the Jonathan Michael funding recommendations, and that was the reason that I personally resigned from the Department for Health and Social Care as political member. So for me, that was a really big issue, and I felt like I had to have the courage of my convictions and put my vote where my mouth was, I suppose. And, you know, Sarah was in agreement with me doing that, but didn't feel herself that she wanted to vote against the budget. So we had discussed that, and that was our agreement.
Okay. Laurie Hooper, having previously been at DHSC, is a question for both of you. Why is there nothing for adults who think they have or do have ADHD? Our children have been receiving help for about 20 years. What about adults? Don't adults matter? It's a very real thing on the Isle of Man, and many people are struggling from day to day. What do you think is being done about this? Laurie Hooper.
So the answer to that is there should be. So the last mandate that I had a hand in writing actually put a requirement on Manx Care to start developing an adult ADHD service as part of the autism strategy, and the kind of next steps from that was to develop an adult ADHD service. In the mandate this year that the current health minister brought to Tynwald, they removed that requirement. So the answer to the question, why is the health service not doing anything for adults with ADHD, that is a political decision that has been made by the current minister and the council of ministers. That is the only reason. There is nothing in the mandate, because politically they decided to take it out.
Joni Farragher.
Yeah, thanks for the question. And I, as Laurie said, that was in the mandate when we were in the DHSC, because we as a political team felt strongly that that was needed. When it was removed from the mandate, I then brought a motion to Tynwald saying that the DHSC and Manx Care needed to set up all age pathways for support and diagnosis for ADHD and autism. And that was passed unanimously within Tynwald. So they will be bringing their plan back to the February Tynwald as to how we can achieve all age support and diagnosis pathways for ADHD and autism.
OK, I think Robert's with us now. Robert, hello, you're live with Joni Farragher and Laurie Hooper.
Hi, I think we've got some big hitter questions now, so I hope you're ready for it, Joni.
Off you go.
One of the questions would be, how are we doing for Dominion status? Do you think we should eventually transfer over to Canadian country status, whereby we've got Dominion status for our constitutional politics on the Isle of Man?
Okay, and the next one is?
Do you think we should have an app for Tynwald for direct voting?
Okay, Laurie Hooper.
So Dominion status actually is not a bad idea. It's something I've talked about with some of my party colleagues in the past. It probably is the next step in our constitutional evolution, if I'm honest, is to say, actually, how do we get more self-determination than we currently have? How do we take one step further away from our intertwining with the UK in terms of legislation? So, yeah, I think Dominion is probably the next logical step.
What will it give us?
It just means the basic things, like we don't need to get the UK to sign off on our legislation. That, you know what I mean? It's the next step. It says we're not quite totally independent of the Crown, because actually there's lots of good reasons why you want to keep some of those links, but it gives us a bit more of that political and legislative independence that I think we're probably lacking at present. And in terms of a Tynwald app for direct voting, to be honest, I would just be happy if there was a government app where I could access all my government services in one place. That, I think, has got to be the next step before we start worrying about direct voting. I'm a bit nervous about that. We don't live in a direct democracy. We do live in a representative democracy, and there's all sorts of good reasons why I think that's a better system. But no, in terms of if government is going to be spending money on developing an app for something, it needs to be around access to government services to smooth some of that out, to make it better. And then I think from there, you could probably go and look at whether you'd look at electronic and digital voting as well.
Okay, Joni Farragher.
Thanks for the question, Robert. Great questions. In terms of the Dominion status, I completely agree with you. It's something that I do feel quite strongly about. I'm going to give a bit of a plug here to Reurtus, who have been pushing on this for many, many years. Reurtus really means vision in Manx, and this is their vision, that we would have I guess Dominion status, that essentially I often, when I use the term Crown CDs, as we're called, and I use it, I call Crown Dominions, because I think the term Crown Dependency is actually not reflective of reality. And this is something that we've also discussed in Crown Dependency Network discussions with Jersey and Guernsey as well. And there's quite a strong feeling on the Channel Islands that we should remove the term dependency and change it to dominion as well. So, yeah, fully in agreement with that. And I think it is the way that we should go in order to strengthen constitutional ties with other countries such as Ireland that we're quite closely aligned to in terms of Celtic history. Should we have a Timwell vote, an app for voting? Yeah, I do think so, yeah.
Okay, all right. Thanks for calling today, Robert. Good to hear from you. And a note in from Pete, who says the all-Ireland rate. The Keys have been dithering over this topic for years. In my opinion, it would appear that the country squire MHKs are afraid of losing their seat should they vote in favour of an all-Ireland rate, Joni Farragher.
Yeah, this is one that's constantly being talked about. I think that generally speaking, the Douglas MHKs tend to be in favour, and as the caller has mentioned, the more rural areas that the MHKs tend to not be in favour. So we can't achieve consensus. Again, you know, just to go back to the point, if we had party politics, we would be able to form a consensus on this much more easily. But we don't.
Laurie Hooper.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, the All-Ireland rate isn't actually going to solve any problems. The problem you have at the moment is the rating system itself is broken, and everyone knows this. If you have got a two-bed house in Kirkmichael, it's got a different rateable value to the exact same two-bed house in Ramsey or Douglas, and that's the problem. So even if you had an All-Ireland rate, you'd still be paying different amounts depending on where you lived, and so you don't actually solve the problem. What needs to happen is a fundamental restructuring of our rate system. Liberal Vanand have been very clear on this for years. A capital model which is supported by the public. In the last consultation that was done, the local authorities support it. It works. We know how it could work. It's not going to be too difficult to set up. Timwell and the government have repeatedly rejected this thing that the public have said, that's the system we quite like. Can we have that system, please? And politicians have repeatedly said no. And I think it is for the exact reason that you've outlined, because it will be good, broadly speaking, for the towns, and it will push rates up in the parishes because they are being artificially kept low by the current rating system. And so there are lots of MHKs, I think, worried if they did the right thing for the island, which is to equalise the system, it would be the right thing for everybody, but actually it might cost them their seats, and you don't get a lot of selfless politicians these days.
And what will be in it for the ratepayer, Laurie Hooper?
Well, it's about fairness, ultimately, because at the moment you've got people living with quite a lot of wealth paying exceptionally low rates, and you've got people who are very low income paying quite high rates by comparison. And so it is about redistributing the way we pay for things. But I think it also starts enabling local authorities and government to do more stuff. So if you've got a fair system that everyone accepts, it kind of works, then people are less funny about when you say, well, I might have to put your rates up a little bit, because people are confident it's being paid for fairly. The next step is making people confident that it's being spent fairly. That is a much harder problem to solve, I think. But it is about that general sense of fairness. And when you have an unfair system, it's very difficult to move things along. So there was a debate very recently around swimming pool rates, for example, in Timwell. And a number of local authority members stepped up and said, don't change the system because the system is fundamentally unfair. And so they were very nervous about increasing or changing the way rates were charged for swimming pools because the underlying system was fundamentally broken. And so you can't change anything because the system's broke. But we can't change the system because it's too difficult. And that's the problem. So actually, the fact we have a broken system is stopping us changing anything else that is connected to the system.
OK, Laurie Hooper, MHK, and Joni Farragher, MHK, are here. Laurie is leader of Lib Vanin inside Tynwald, and Joni Farragher, the leader of the Manx Labour Party, the Alaman Labour Party. Lots of questions to get to. If you want to get in touch, by all means, call, text, email or WhatsApp. This coming Thursday, we're live at Castle Rushen High School with the year 12s, the 16-year-olds. They'll be going to be available to vote this time next year. That's this Thursday, live in Castle, down at Castle Rushen High School.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
We are Breast Cancer Now volunteering in Isle of Man. We raise funds for vital research into breast cancer, and we also present breast awareness sessions across the island, in schools, offices and clubs. To request an awareness session or to volunteer with Breast Cancer Now volunteering in Isle of Man, contact Angie on 498864.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
Dear Santa, this Christmas I would like more customers and more sales, please. I have been very good.
There are more reliable ways to make sure your business gets what it needs this winter. At Manx Radio, we'll create tailor-made advertising solutions to get you the results you want over the festive season and into the new year. Call our friendly sales team now on 682620 and give your business a really happy Christmas and New Year with the nation's station, Manx Radio.
Can I have a new bike too?
No, buy your own.
Oh.
We appreciate that running a business can be a challenge and presents risks. At NFU Mutual, 100 years of insurance experience has taught us a lot. We pride ourselves on our local service and having real conversations with you to understand your unique needs. NFU Mutual work hard to ensure that claims are handled efficiently, with minimum hassle to get you back to normal as soon as possible. For business insurance, call NFU Mutual on 674 191.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Let relaxation take over, and any plans, projects, or conversations, just place them on hold.
Brought to you by the Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
The narrow road steepens and twists to eventually reveal glistening sea and a glorious sun-trapped secret cove.
Shine and connect.
Vitamin-rich sea air relaxes you and freshens your skin.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
19 minutes before one with Johnny Farragher, MHK, and Laurie Hooper, MHK. And Julian's on now. Hello, Julian. You're live with the leader of the Liberal Vanin and the Isle of Man Labour parties.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Joni and Laurie.
Hi, Julian.
Hiya. As you are both political members for the Department of Infrastructure, what is your opinion on the 20-mile-an-hour rollout across the island?
Joni Farragher?
So, the DOI's opinion is obviously that we should roll this out. I agree with it because it's about making towns more livable for all of our constituents. I also think that it's something that my constituents support because it's Douglas East, and that's where that is the place that people are very concerned about people speeding.
It's difficult to get above 20 miles per hour in Douglas East, isn't it?
Well, it should be, but there's always that few, and it can make it very frightening for people who are walking along from school, etc., with small children.
Okay, Laurie Hooper?
Yeah, the interesting thing is this is a Tim Walz instruction, so this is one of those rare occasions where Tim Walz has told the government to do something, as opposed to government coming to Tim Walz with a plan and saying, can I do it? This is Tim Walz very clearly instructing government, go away and do this. I think having an opinion on it from a DOI perspective doesn't matter. We've been told by Tim Walz to do this. Tim Walz is in charge. We have to do it. From my perspective, the feedback I've had from people in Ramsey has been broadly, don't touch the main road, but the rest of the town is pretty much 20 anyway, and they are people that speed in certain areas, so can we slow them down? So broadly speaking, I don't think it's going to cause too many issues from my perspective in a Ramsey side of things, but I'm waiting now to see the actual consultation feedback, because I know that they've been spending a lot of time pulling all that together, and I'm really interested to see what people think about those maps and the roads and which ones should be in and which ones should be out, and ultimately that should help decide, I think, where the 20 mile an hour zones that Tim Walz has told us to do, where they should go and what areas they should cover. So I don't think it's too difficult a process, at least from, say, my constituency perspective. It's difficult to do more than 20 most parts of Ramsey at the best of time, and actually I don't think you want people speeding around your towns.
Julia?
Well, aside from the Chief Constable saying that there are no statistics supporting it on a safety grounds and it won't be policeable anyway, I'm interested to get your take on the business consequences for, say, delivery drivers or health and social care worker visits. How are all these things, and bus timetables, if you're doing 30% less on average across most of the place, and we're talking as well of Kurt Michael, Main Road Onken, what about this, the idea that, you know, people are effectively, they're being asked to drive 30% slower. How are you going to fit all the delivery drivers like Tesco's into the same length of day when everyone's ostensibly going to have to drive a third slower?
Okay, Joni Farragher.
So I don't think it should be our opinion on what how that's going to impact. We should be getting the opinions from those people, and I believe that that's what we're doing in terms of getting the consultation. I think we've already mentioned that actually you can't drive faster than 20 in a lot of these areas anyway, so I can't really understand how it would impact upon delivery drivers, etc., to a degree that's significant. And obviously Bus Fanning have been included in working up this scheme that was, as Laurie mentioned, a directive of Timwald. So that's been taken into account by
not every road is going to be 20 miles per hour anyway, is it?
No, but the ones that have been impacted, Bus Fanning have been included in working up this plan, and it's not going to have a tangible impact upon bus timetables.
You see, some people get the feeling that this is a sprat to catch a mackerel, that it's the thin end of the wedge, that once this is in, that somebody in Timwald will say, aha, now we've got you, let's make the whole island 20 miles per hour.
They could. I mean, arguably a Timwald member could do that today if they really wanted to. I mean, if you talk to the police, if you look at the statistics, if you really want to stop or reduce serious road accidents, you deal away with the no speed limit areas that we have. I don't think anybody wants that. I think that politically and publicly that probably wouldn't be supported. But if your focus is on actually reducing collisions and reducing road incidents, you would look at, there's a couple of parts of the mountain road you'd put speed cameras on. Yeah. But I don't think that's what the Manx public want. I don't think that's what we want as politicians either. So you have to find other ways, I think, of tackling those problems. So yeah, you're absolutely right, this could very well be, someone could say, let's have an all-island blanket 20 mile an hour speed limit, but there's nothing stopping a Timwald member tabling that motion tomorrow. There was nothing stopping them tabling that motion a year ago. It isn't where I think we're at, and I think if any politician did decide to table a motion saying an all-island 20 mile an hour speed limit, that would be a very brave politician.
Okay, Julian.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation at the sea terminal when you had the 20 mile an hour discussions there with hauliers and a taxi driver. And they were saying, you know, early mornings when there's no one around and they're going to be driving along Main Road Onken, or they're going to be going along Woodbourne Road or Alexander Drive or Somerset Road or Westmoreland Road at 20 miles an hour when there's no one else on the roads, time is money, and they're going to be impacted no matter how you slice it, because if it's anything like Wales, who are actually reversing a relatively small percentage, but all the distributor and arterial roads, because they're the ones that stop the whole system from clogging up. Mm. It would be like clogging the arteries in your heart up, for the rest of the body is going to suffer.
All right. Anyway, thanks. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Julian. Just going back onto the 20 miles per hour, Harry emailed in just to say, well, if the chief constable has said they're not going to police it, it's basically down to human nature, isn't it? Then?
So I don't think that's entirely accurate. My understanding of what the chief constable has said is they will police it in exactly the same way they currently police 30 mile an hour zones. So I don't think it is true to say they aren't going to police
it. But we haven't got speed cameras, and you don't routinely see police officers with radar guns.
Oh, there. I don't know. I think you do see them out and about. I've definitely come across a few with the radar guns or police parked in strategic parts around the island, and I know they're actually quite responsive to people raising concerns and saying, I've got issues on a particular street, a particular area. They do kind of that reactive kind of enforcement approach. So no, I don't think it's strictly true to say that the chief constable has said they won't be enforcing it. I think what he said is, we enforce 30 mile an hour zones, we will enforce 20s in exactly the same way. He's not going to be devoting any extra resource to it, but that's definitely a question for the chief constable around whether he thinks he has adequate resource to properly police the island. That's definitely not a question I can answer.
Okay, a question now, this is from Simon, and it is, could you ask the leaders of the political parties what is their current view of the immigration taking place in the Isle of Man, Joni Farragher?
So we don't have a great deal of data about what immigration is taking place. I think what the island plan tells us is that we're trying to look for economically active people in certain age categories, and I support that. We do need more economically active people here. I think that we should also, in tandem with that, be supporting Manx young people to come back from university and to come back to the island in terms of affordable housing, etc., and looking at what the barriers are to stop that. But I don't think that there's any issue at all with attracting other economically active people.
How would you get Manx kids who possibly have been to university, seen the big city life, seen the bright lights and the motorways and whatever, how would you get them back?
Well, I think it's just down to, you know, family connections and family ties as well, isn't it? I know that you might not get everybody back. That's never going to be the goal and would never happen. But there are people who want to come back, but who've had barriers put in their way. So, for example, in terms of housing, that they've just felt it was completely unattainable for them. So they've stayed where they were because of that reason. And I heard that a lot on the doorstep when I was canvassing, that people said that their children would have come back to the island but couldn't financially. And we need to address that.
Okay, Laurie Hooper.
Yeah, I think housing has been the biggest barrier that comes up when people talk about relocating here or coming back home after university or whatever it may be. A lack of affordable housing is probably the biggest thing that is stopping people, because there are lots of great job opportunities here. The private sector generally does pretty well. There's lots of things you can do here that you can't do really as well elsewhere. But it is always comes down to, well, actually, where can I find somewhere to live that is affordable? That's the biggest challenge. And so I think if you want to encourage people to come back here, you do it through a combination of loan write-offs and financial incentives, but also you make sure they've got somewhere affordable where they can live, where they want to live as well, not just random affordable housing in the middle of nowhere. Actually, it's got to be near the services, near amenities, where people actually want to live.
Okay.
And that's where I think we've seen some failings.
Well, on that subject, Erin dropped a note into us as well and just said, what are the two politicians' views on housing, the affordability of housing for young people trying to get on the property ladder, or the fact that, I think it was announced the other day, no new public sector houses have been built during this past administration. There have been some refurbs, but no new ones, Joni Farragher.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's absolutely appalling, to be honest, and a really shocking fact that we have all been elected on a platform of housing, and it was a huge election issue in 2021, and that this administration has really not got on with it. They haven't.
But why?
Well, that's such a great question. I haven't been in the Council of Ministers, so I just don't actually know why. Have they been arguing about it? Have they, you know, have they not been able to identify solutions? All you have to do is build, and I think that's, you know, that it is a real failure of this administration.
Okay. You were in the Cohen for a while.
I was for a long time, I think. And if you talk to any local authority that deals with housing on the island, they'll tell you the same thing, that the government's approach has been to say no to investment for not just this administration, but the last as well, a long time. It's been very difficult to get government to stump up and put money into things like housing. You're right, there was a question I asked that got an answer back saying we haven't expanded public housing stock at all. We haven't built any additional properties, which is shocking, actually, to hear that. But also another recent answer, how much money have you allocated? Comin have announced 100 affordable properties a year. How much money have they allocated to that? Nothing. Not a single pound has been allocated to their commitment to build more houses. And that's shocking. It's performative politics, I think, you get from the government at the minute. They make these bold promises and big statements, and actually when someone says, great, can you just explain where the money's going to come from, or how much money, and the answer is, I don't know yet, I haven't figured it out.
Well, a week ago is yesterday, Joe McGuinness from Ramsey Town Commissioners was sitting where you are, and Devon Watson from the Douglas was sitting where you are, Joni Farragher, and they were metaphorically banging the table about public sector housing. So they'll have Prometheus chained, they're handcuffed in the corner. What's going to break this cycle?
We have been fighting that for a long time, actually. What needs to break the cycle is government needs to put some money up. So Liberal Vanin actually very recently endorsed a policy position for the next election, which is we should be investing £25 million a year building affordable housing on the island. It isn't rocket science. We know there is a lack of supply. We know the market is very tight. We know there are lots of people who want to buy houses or rent houses on the island, and there just aren't enough. Well, the solution there is to build more houses. There's a lot of land already zoned, so we're not talking about zoning new land. This is brownfield land that's zoned. It's already been zoned in the various area plans, hasn't been taken up. Okay, well, let's build some houses. I mean, is this something that I'm missing here? People need houses. Government investment in housing stock is great for the economy. It's great for the construction sector. It's great for people. It's great for our immigration policy. It helps bring people back. There's no downside to this. Why wouldn't we be investing in building housing on the island? And there is no good answer to that. The government hasn't come up with one. All you get is a bit of noise, a bit of spin, and actually just build some houses, guys. This is not rocket science.
Joni Farragher.
Yeah, I can only agree with Laurie's words there. I know that Douglas Council in particular have been really trying and have done some really good things as well in terms of in Willesden there. They've built a lot themselves, but have come up against a lot of barriers, and as you've said, Devon has said that, mentioned that several times in Manx Labour Party meetings. It's something that we need to address, and we need to address fast.
Okay, we're almost out of time now, so I just want to, just some general questions and quick answers, if you could, if you would. How do you stand with armed police on the Isle of Man, Laurie Hooper?
Sadly, I think it seems that they are getting more and more necessary. Like I said before about the Chief Constable, though, he has a lot of discretion as to how he exercises the powers that he has. And really, I think the deployment of armed police has to be an operational decision for the Chief Constable. It's absolutely his job to help keep our community safe. And if he thinks that is the best way of doing it, ultimately, that's you have to leave those decisions up to him.
Joni Farago.
I think I would have a slightly different opinion there. I agree, obviously, that the Chief Constable has operational independence, but I think that the oversight body is Timwald. And I would like to see more evidence of why it is necessary to have armed police on our very safe streets.
Okay. All right. Final question. This is onshore wind, offshore wind, or both, Laurie Hooper?
Well, at the moment, it looks like we're going to end up with both. I was having a conversation with somebody about this only recently. They were concerned. There's a public meeting in Garth. Lots of people very worried, I think, about offshore wind there. And the challenge you have, of course, is that particular development is going to affect the visuals
in
Garth.
Yes.
It's not going to affect anybody else. And so from an island-wide perspective, you're going to get 80% of people saying, great, it's not in my constituency, and 20% of people saying, but it is in ours. Ultimately, I think it is the right thing to do for the island to have sustainable, renewable energy. If the cheapest and most effective way of doing that is a combination of onshore and offshore wind, then that's what we should be going. I'm more focused, I think, on making sure electricity prices come down and stay down, as opposed to any of the other stuff that surrounds why you would do renewable energy. But ultimately, it's got to be about getting the best value out of there for the Manx taxpayer.
Okay, onshore or offshore or both, Joni Farago?
Short answer is both, Andy. And really, I would base that upon the public consultation that we held a few years ago on this, which is the only one that we've had on net zero and climate change adaptation in general, which showed quite broad public support for both.
Okay. Politics in the pub, Joni Farago. The Labour Party have politics in the pub. Which pub and when?
Yeah, so I'd just like to give a bit of a plug to this. Thank you, Andy. It's a recent initiative of ours. So we alternate months and we have politics in the pub in Prospect Pub between 7 and 9 on the third Thursday. Our next one is November, and then the next one after that will be January. So it's alternate months, and you can have a look at our Facebook page for more information about that.
Okay, and Liberal Vanin at the Manx League. And when is it, Laurie Hooper?
So, again, we also do a quick pint in the pub, normally in the Traff in Ramsey. I can't remember the date off the top of my head, but check the website. We are having a public meeting on the 27th of October at 7:30 at the Manx Legion in Douglas. And if anyone is interested in learning more about Liberal Vanin, if anyone's interested in learning about party politics or just wants to come along and have a bit of a chat, please do.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today. Good to hear from that. Joni Farago, MHK, Laurie Hooper, MHK. And hello to everybody in the Traff on the quay in Ramsey. So, this coming we're open line tomorrow and live from Castle Roshan High School with the students on Thursday. Thanks to Chris on the phones today.
WINT.